Hello, everyone. This is Dr. Sarah Gottfried. I'm the integrative physician who helps women feel sexy, ripe, and delicious again using natural hormone balancing, regardless of your age. I see my mission as getting you to a place of your highest potential by using the science of you to help you get fully self-actualized in your life, in your health, in your self-care, in your relationships, and boosting your vitality and libido happen to be the happy byproducts of this work. So, overview. Let's start with an overview. I'm starting today with what I'm calling the jumpstart. And this is for my friends who are on the call who maybe, like me, have a little bit of attention deficit and you want to have a place to really focus and set your intention. So I've got a five-step jumpstart, five things that you can start today to impact your stress response and your sex drive. It's a way to really dive in and be fast and efficient about it. Then we're going to cover why, what, how when it comes to stress. Why assess where you are with stress? Why are biomarkers important? I'm going to be talking about some of the biomarkers today. What you can do to not just assess with biomarkers, but address stress. How you can alter your relationship to stress. And what you can do with your food. How food impacts mood. How it keeps you from being in the mood. And how food contributes to weight gain and anxiety and poor sleep and other things that tend to drag down vitality and sex drive. So I want to get started first by shifting our focus just for a moment. I want you to either sit, or if you're standing, I'd like for you to gently close your eyes or close your eyes about 90% and begin by taking your attention to your breath. Many of you know I'm also a yoga teacher in addition to being a gynecologist. And I want you to tune into your breath right now, noticing your inhale, slowing it down, noticing your exhale, noticing how smooth it is or if it's jagged. And as you tune into your breathing, I'd like for you to pay attention to what I call your fuel tank. So without getting too caught up in the details, I'd like for you to have a sense for how do you measure the amount of fuel you have in your body? Where is your fuel tank located? Do you feel it all over your body? Is it something that you tune into by scanning from your crown down to your toes? Or do you feel it in your belly? Maybe you feel it in the back of your heart. But I'd like you to tune into your fuel tank and notice how full is it? Are you pretty full? Are you overflowing? Are you three-quarters full, half full, quarter tank, almost empty, running on fumes? I'd like for you to check into that as you tune into your breath. I had a conversation with Nicole Dadone recently where she said something that really stuck with me. She said, I keep my fuel tank between three-quarters and full at all times. And if I'm ever dropping below three-quarters, I have to dramatically increase my self-care. I thought, wow, that is fantastic. That really landed with me. That's my gem for the day. So that really landed with me, and I wanted to offer that as an intention as we talk today about stress and sex drive and vitality, because I think it really starts with your fuel tank. Do you have cracks in your fuel tank? Is it that we just don't put enough into your tank? What's happening? And how can we get you to a place where it's overflowing? Okay, now if your eyes have been closed or mostly closed, you can open them a little wider now. We are going to dive into what I'm calling the jumpstart in five steps. You have this as a PDF, which is in the forum. In the forum, I just posted a link where you can get to this particular PDF along with a few other things like my cortisol tests. I've got those posted there too. I'm going to be talking about that today. But let's dive into the jumpstart. So I've got five quick things that you can do that really help you with stress, with cortisol, and perhaps with sex drive. So let me run through these five things. Number one, I want you, starting today, to drink 8 ounces of water before you go to bed, and not for the reason that you think. There was a study from the University of Chicago that showed that 8 ounces of water before bed shuts down 100% of hunger pains and cravings. Now, the interesting thing with this is that we know that mild dehydration will trigger your body to release stress hormones, to release the most common stress hormones such as cortisol. We're going to be talking about cortisol a lot today. It's the main hormone of stress, and it's one of those hormones that's so crucial and so important to your life, but it can turn on you. If it's too high or if it's too low, it can really cause problems in your physiology. And I imagine that many of the people who've chosen to join us for Mission Ignition have an issue with cortisol, and I'm going to talk a little bit about why this is important to assess. Now, many of you may think, I'm not drinking water before I go to bed. That's going to make me get up and pee. I don't want to do that. Turns out it doesn't increase your need to pee at night. It seems to really help with prevention of dehydration, with triggering the wrongful production of cortisol. This is something that my great-grandmother did every night before she went to bed. She'd have 8 ounces of warm water with lemon. She happened to love Meyer lemons. And this really helped her with hydration, with detoxification. It was one of her nightly rituals. So that's number one in your jumpstart. Number two is I want you to set the intention over the next month to either start or change up a daily ritual. Many of us are programmed to really focus on others and to give until we drop. That's one of the ways that we deplete our tank. And I want you to spend this next 30 days getting clear about how we can focus on you, the science of you. And one of those is going to be to really attune to what you most need. So I find that a daily practice really makes a difference with that attunement. So there's a few ideas here. One is to do something like yin yoga, and I can share with you on our Q&A on Friday what I do. I only do three poses. Saddle pose is basically what I love, and I can give you more details about how I do that pretty much every morning. The other suggestion I have is what I call the four G's. This is a writing exercise, and I'm just going to give you a quick little overview of this. I had one person who responded to my question about what your morning ritual is in the forum, who said that she does write in a gratitude journal, and this is basically the next step from a gratitude journal. So four G's. The four G's are basically what's good. That's the first G. What's good in your life? So noticing what's good in your life. Number two is what glitches you've encountered over the past 24 hours. So the second G is glitches. The third G is gratitude. What is it that you're grateful for? And the fourth G is goals for the day. So I have a lot of other daily rituals that I'm going to be talking about over the course of our 30 days, but I want you to choose one, even if it's just 5 minutes in the morning with your kid climbing on you or, you know, your husband asking you where his socks are, whatever it is. I want you to start a morning ritual that's really focused on your fire, your pilot light, as my friend Lisa Rankin likes to say. The number three jumpstart is that I want you to dump caffeine or alcohol or both for the next 30 days. Now, I know this is something that doesn't make me so popular, but our goal for the next 30 days is to really get your cortisol where it needs to be, to get your sex hormones where they need to be, and to get your thyroid where it needs to be, in your sweet spot, where it's not too high and not too low. What we know with caffeine is that it raises cortisol and it blocks serotonin receptors. We're going to be talking a lot about serotonin for the next 30 days. and I want you to get to a place where serotonin is at a level that's exactly what you need. So caffeine raises cortisol, often too high, and it blocks serotonin receptors. Alcohol is associated with estrogen dominance. It does a lot of different things that I'm going to be talking about over the next 30 days. But what I find in my practice is that many women 35 and older really see an issue with their ability to tolerate alcohol. They find that their sleep gets more disturbed, or the day after they have two glasses of wine, they have increased anxiety. And I want you to really tune into what happens when you have alcohol. Could you give it up for 30 days? That's actually a diagnostic test. So for people who can't give it up for 30 days, it usually means that you have a sticky relationship with alcohol. Doesn't mean you're an alcoholic, but it means that you have a sticky relationship. And if you want to know more about that, just ask me in the forum or on our live Q&A on Friday. I want to ask you, when was the last time that you detoxified? When was the last time that you changed your menu in some dramatic way or cleaned out your liver? I want you to choose to do that over the next 30 days. Number four is an oil change. I think we have an oil crisis in the U.S., and it's not just petroleum. If you don't use coconut oil, I want you to start. I want you to start sometime this week. It's fantastic for your thyroid. It's very stable at high temperatures, and that makes it better as an oil to cook with than olive oil. Olive oil is really good at room temperature or at low heat. It's very stable, but I want you to be cooking with coconut oil. So by my stove, I have both an organic spray, and I also have a jar of organic extra virgin coconut oil that I use. And I add a tablespoon of coconut oil every day at lunch to my vegetables. So it's incredibly good for your thyroid. Your thyroid is one of the, what I call Charlie's Angels. It's one of the key three parts to you having the right kind of hormonal balance to keep your sex drive high as you age. So the three different parts, the three legs to the stool, or what I like to call Charlie's Angels, are number one, your adrenals and your cortisol level, number two, your thyroid, and number three, your sex hormones, your estrogen and progesterone in the right proportion. So that's Charlie's Angels. With your oil change, you will be improving your thyroid. And then number five, this is a little bit more meaty. I want you to work with, over the next 30 days, somatic intelligence. By that I mean your ability to tune into your body to be able to tell what's true for you. I gave you this example as we just got started today of your fuel tank, assessing where you are with your fuel tank. What does your gauge say? I want you to use your body as a gauge of your current capacity, your own current capacity, and to correct from that knowledge in real time. Now that takes practice, but I want to plant the seed here at the beginning. How to align your head, your heart, and your body in real time as your innate intelligence. So out of these five jump starts, I want you to pick one from the list and to stick to it for the week. If you have the energy to pick more than one, do that. If you're an overachiever, pick more. But if you are feeling overwhelmed by the amount of content we're going to be throwing at you, which is significant, I want you to come back to this jumpstart. So it's an easy place to hook in and just choose one or two of these practices to begin. So we're talking today about our capacity to deal with stress, stress resilience, what stress does to your body, how it ages, depletes, de-energizes, and strips you of sex drive, how it accelerates aging. And I want to start this conversation with cortisol. I also want to encourage you to get your cortisol tested. I've given you a few examples of how you can do that. I'm always talking about Canary Club. That's one way to do it, canaryclub.org. That's a place where you can order a cortisol test. You can also ask your physician to order a morning cortisol blood level. I really think it's important that you measure your cortisol. So I'm a big fan of measuring your biomarkers so that we have a sense of where you're starting from, what your benchmark is, and where we need to go. We know that we can change what we track. It's part of this whole quantified self movement that Tim Ferriss has popularized with his books. His latest book is The 4-Hour Body. And I, if this is meaningful for you, I find that it's very meaningful for me, I really want to encourage you to do some testing. Now, some people have a great deal of stress resilience, and some just don't. I happen to fit into the latter category. I'm married. My husband fits into the former category. It doesn't seem to matter what gets thrown his way. He's got just tremendous stress resilience. In fact, when he's faced with increasing stress, he rises to the occasion and he is like a warrior. And for me, sometime around medical school or maybe residency, I'm not sure when, I got to a place where I could no longer get into fight or flight. In fact, my response to stress was to collapse. And I hid it well. I had a lot of different strategies for how to hide it, but I was really running on an empty tank. It wasn't until 2006 that I actually measured my adrenal function. And there's a lot of ways to measure it. I mentioned cortisol. You can also measure your androgens. You can measure DHEA. You can measure your free and total and bioavailable testosterone. You can also measure your pregnenolone. Pregnenolone we'll be talking more about in the next couple of weeks. It's one of those hormones that European women know a lot about, and you don't hear about it so much in the U.S., but it's the mother hormone of all the other sex hormones in your body, so it's a really important one. But I did not measure my cortisol until 2006, even with everything that I knew going back to 1989 and first landing in Boston at medical school. I never measured my cortisol until 2006. I found that it was really high in the morning. In fact, you can see in the forum, I just linked there to some PDFs that you have access to. You can see some of my hormone testing. So at that time, I started reading more integrative and functional medicine textbooks where they described how adrenal stress, stress on these little glands that sit on top of your kidneys like little hats, can lead to problems such as prediabetes or polycystic ovarian syndrome or anxiety or attention deficit. I decided to check my blood glucose, and I found that my blood glucose was really high. My blood sugar was high. I was in the prediabetes range. And it turned out that because of my high cortisol, I would swing between high and low with my glucose levels, and it would make me feel either like I had brain fog with high levels or like I was hypoglycemic and almost bonking. This was astounding to me. I could not believe that a high cortisol could impact my health so profoundly and could lead to prediabetes, and it just got me motivated to turn this around. So I started looking at some of the things I was doing. These are some of the things we're going to be talking about today. I found that I had a couple of behaviors that really made my cortisol climb high, high, high. One was caffeine. I happened to love Pete's Coffee at the time. And the other was running. I was really into 10Ks, running 10Ks then, while I was a working mom. And we know that working moms have the worst metrics of all. Working moms go to work, and we know from some data that John Gray published, he's the guy who did the Mars-Venus series, he published some data showing that women who go to work have double the cortisol of men. But then it gets worse. We come home and our cortisol climbs even higher. So more on how to counter that in a moment, but I'd like to present myself as a work in progress, and that this last bit of high cortisol data that I want to share with you is my telomeres. So let me just talk about telomeres here for a moment. Has anyone heard of telomeres? Telomeres are these little plastic caps that are on your chromosomes. Very similar to shoelaces. You know how you have those plastic caps on your shoelaces that keep the shoelaces from unwinding? Same thing on chromosomes. You have these little caps on your chromosomes called telomeres, and it basically keeps the chromosomes from unraveling. And what we know is that telomeres are the best, the number one indicator of your biological aging. So what makes telomeres get worse? What makes them shorten, which is not good? Well, the number one thing is stress. And we know this from data out of UCSF. There's a woman there named Dr. Elizabeth Blackburn. She She happened to get the Nobel Prize in 2009 for her work on telomeres. She studied women in the ICU, the children's ICU, at the University of California, San Francisco, UCSF. And she found that women who were the most stressed, mothers who were the most stressed with their sick kids in the ICU, had the shortest telomeres. They had the most accelerated aging. So we know that if your cortisol is high, it tends to give you a muffin top. It tends to make you feel tired but wired. It gives you a long list of symptoms that I've got in my blog, and you can link to that just by clicking on adrenal burnout on my first page of my website, sarahgottfriedmd.com. What we know is that high cortisol does a couple of major things. It makes your glucose go up and it accelerates the aging process. It also makes your telomeres shorten. So I measured my telomeres a few weeks ago through SpectraCell. I'm going to spell that for you in case you're interested in getting tested too. SpectraCell.com. SpectraCell.com. I did my telomere testing, and here's the result. I was hoping that I was in a good place, you know, better than average in terms of my telomere length, and it turns out I wasn't. So I think all those years of my high cortisol really affected my telomeres. I got a score of 29%. And what that means is that 71% of other people my age, 44, are actually doing better in terms of their telomere length. So I've got to start a whole telomere lengthening project, and I can tell you more about what that consists of on Friday if you're interested in hearing more about that. So telomeres, you may want to check this biomarker. We've mentioned two biomarkers now, telomeres and also your cortisol level. Okay, now I want to shift to a couple of meditations, and I'm going to just mention some of them here, some of my favorite meditations, and we will talk more about them on Friday if you want to hear more about different meditations. I really believe when it comes to meditation that you don't want to close yourself off from the option of meditation just because sitting in a corner of your living room doesn't sound appealing. So I'm a big believer in finding the right form of meditation for you. I happen to have difficulty sitting. I can't do, you know, that sort of stereotype of meditation where you're sitting for 30 minutes on a cushion. I like yin yoga. That's the way that I really like to meditate. So I mentioned saddle pose is one of my favorite yin yoga poses, and I like that because it's a sacral release. And if you want to Google yin yoga saddle pose, you can find a couple of things on YouTube for how to do that. Another one I like is something called soft belly. And this is one that was popularized by a guy that I like a lot named James Gordon. He is at George Washington University. He is famous for his Food as Medicine program, and he wrote a book called Unstuck. It's a book that is an integrative approach to depression, how to reverse depression. And if you have issues with depression, I'd like you to look him up, James Gordon. He has a soft belly meditation that I'm just going to take you through briefly right now. So I want you to tune again to your breath. If you're multitasking, I want you to sit or stand and put your hands on your belly and either close your eyes completely or close them 90%. Sometimes if you have anxiety, it's easier to close them 90%. And I want you to inhale and feel your belly expand. Exhale and let your belly move back toward your spine. And do this a couple more times. You inhale and say the word soft. Belly expands. Exhale, belly moves back toward spine, and you say belly. Inhale, soft. Exhale, belly. Okay, that's another meditation. Meditation's been shown to lower cortisol level. It's also been shown to lengthen telomeres. It can lengthen telomeres within a short amount of time. And this is data that came out of the work of both Elizabeth Blackburn, that I mentioned before, the Nobel laureate, work that she did in conjunction with Dean Ornish, who's another colleague here in Sausalito. You probably have heard of him. He's sort of famous for the crazy low-fat diet that reverses heart disease, which I'm not a big fan of. We can talk about that more if you have questions about it. But meditation has been shown to lower cortisol if it's high, and that applies to you if you have any muffin top, if you're storing fat at your belly. We want to lower any high cortisol that you have, and it's also been shown to lengthen your telomeres. So you better believe that meditation is part of my telomere lengthening project. Okay, so I mentioned a couple of meditations here, yin yoga, soft belly. I want to mention one other, and that is a forgiveness ritual. There's a forgiveness scholar at Stanford named Fred Luskin. Dr. Fred Luskin, I'm a big fan of his. He's got a few books out there. And he was recently featured in O Magazine. I don't know if you're like me and devour O Magazine each month. I sure do. And we know from his work and the work of others that forgiveness is one of the profound ways that you can lower cortisol when it's too high. And I'll be mentioning some ways that you can work with forgiveness as our time unrolls over the next 30 days. Now, today, I'm not going to be talking a lot about the hypothalamus and the pituitary. I'm going to talk a little bit more at the beginning of our live Q&A on Friday about that and about functional medicine and what do we know about trying to change your control system for your hormones. And that's the control system is basically the hypothalamus and the pituitary. So we'll be talking about that at the beginning of our live call on Friday. So please come on time for that. And then I'm also going to be talking a little bit about some of the foods that I want you to avoid that send your sex drive into hiding and how to coax it back. So let's move now to a few other tips that I have for you. I'm trying to make this chock full of tips. I want to talk about sleep and I want to talk about orgasm. Let's take on sleep first. So we did your intention at the beginning where I asked you to tune into your fuel tank. And a big part of what fills your tank is sleep. So we're supposed to be spending about a third of our life sleeping. And I find for most women between 35 and 50, that starts to decline, right? So how is it that you're sleeping right now? How did you sleep last night? Did you wake up this morning feeling restored? That's a big part of tuning into your fuel tank is how restored you feel in the morning. Do you have any temperature instability? Now, you may not feel that you have night sweats or hot flashes. That tends to not happen so dramatically until women get to about 45 to 50. But some women younger, say between 35 and 45, will have some temperature instability at night where they want to pull off the covers. Maybe you're really cold when you go to bed, but then you wake up in the middle of the night and you're really hot. And it's very common to have this kind of temperature instability. And there's a lot of ways of working with that besides taking hormone therapy. We're going to be talking about bioidentical hormone therapy. When is it that you want to jump to that versus trying to get your body to do the balancing that you need, the natural balancing? It's a little beyond our scope for our first session, but it's one of the things we will be talking about. One of the foods that's been shown to make a difference with temperature instability is flax seeds. So you may know this. Flax seeds are actually a phytoestrogen. There was a study looking at women taking 2 tablespoons of flax seeds twice a day. So you could have it on your oatmeal in the morning, or in my case, I like to eat soaked oat groats. That may sound a little freaky, but that's something that I love to eat together with low glycemic index fruit like blueberries and some nuts and 3 tablespoons of flax seeds. I happen to like 3 tablespoons. So that's what I have at breakfast. And the study was 2 tablespoons of flax seeds at breakfast or twice a day. It was shown to reduce hot flashes and night sweats. Another way of working with temperature instability is that we know that women 35 plus do best if they're sleeping in a room that's 64 degrees or cooler. Now, I can't get my husband to agree to this. This is one of those places where those of you who are listening to this who don't have a partner, you are so much further along than I am because you can hopefully control the temperature of your room and keep it at 64 degrees or less when you're sleeping. It will dramatically improve your quality of sleep. So I can't get my husband to agree to it, but when I'm in a hotel by myself, which happens extremely rarely, maybe once every 3 years, it's totally heaven, right? Try it. Here's another suggestion. If you have symptoms of high cortisol at night, so I mentioned high cortisol during the day feels a particular way. It can feel like being tired but wired. It can feel like anxiety, especially under stress. It can feel like stress is unfair, that you have more than your share. When you have high cortisol at night, the symptoms are a little bit different. It can lead to insomnia. It can lead to disrupted sleep. The most common symptom that I see of women who have high cortisol at night is that they get their second wind. They get their second wind around 9, 10, 11 p.m. And if this is you, if you're someone who has just been a night owl or you've become a night owl and you really get this energy burst at night, you've been depleted a lot of the day, but then you get this energy burst at night, that may be because of high cortisol. It may not be a good thing. So one of the ways of testing this, going back to canaryclub.org, you can measure your cortisol at four different times during the day. It's called a diurnal cortisol. And you can measure your cortisol first thing in the morning before breakfast, lunch, and dinner, and then again before you go to bed. And if you have a high cortisol at night, that is accelerating the aging process. It is doing what we call catabolism. It's causing more wear and tear and breakdown of your cells and tissues in your body at a time when at night you should have low cortisol and you should be doing all of your repair work. Repair and healing is what should be happening at night. And low cortisol is associated with the highest melatonin level, and that helps you sleep restoratively and wake up feeling refreshed. So if you have high cortisol at night, we want to jump on that. Another symptom of it is women who wake up at 3 or 4 in the morning with racing thoughts or with mind chatter. So if this is you, if you feel like you have a high cortisol at night, you can either test for it or you could actually try one of my favorite supplements that I'm going to give you now, and that's called Cortisol Manager. Cortisol Manager. It's made by a supplement company called Integrative Therapeutics. You can get it from my website if you'd like. If you go to sarahgottfriedmd.com, I have a purple navigation bar on the left, and you can click on Shop for Your Health, and you can click through to order some Cortisol Manager if you want to try that. Let me tell you what's in there. So Cortisol Manager is a really fascinating supplement, and what I love about it is that it combines wisdom of both the East and the West. So the main ingredient in Cortisol Manager is an herb called ashwagandha. Ashwagandha, maybe I should spell it for you if I'm capable here. Ashwagandha is an Ayurvedic herb that has been proven to act as a double adaptogen. And what that means is that it helps to lower your cortisol when it's too high, and it also raises it when it's too low. So I'm a big fan of giving Cortisol Manager at night because it helps to get your cortisol low at night when it should be low, when you shouldn't be breaking down your tissues, and you should be getting a nice restorative night's sleep. And then it helps to normalize your cortisol first thing in the morning when it should be spiking between 6 and 8 a.m. That's the normal circadian rhythm, is that you have a spike in your cortisol between 6 and 8 a.m. So let me spell ashwagandha for you. It's A-S-H-W-A-G-A-N-D-H-A. It's an Ayurvedic herb, one of my favorites. The other thing in Cortisol Manager is something called phosphatidylserine, and that is something that also helps to lower cortisol levels. And I can give you more data on that. If you are someone who really likes data, you want the citations and the studies, I've got a citation for you. In fact, I'm writing my high cortisol chapter right now in my book. I've got this book coming out with Scribner, Simon, and Schuster in a year called The Hormone Cure. That's the reason for the link to the survey, hormonecuresurvey.com. So I'm working right now on the high cortisol chapter, and I have those citations. If you want them, just let me know in the forum or on our Q&A. So you could try Cortisol Manager. The dose is 1 to 2 of these pills. It's a proprietary blend, and you take it at bedtime. If it doesn't work for you, you may need to go a little deeper to investigate your sleep. And let me give you a suggestion there. Have you heard of Zeo? Z-E-O. It is a sleep coach that is described in Tim Ferriss's new book, The 4-Hour Body. His book is very manly, right? He talks a lot about how to lose fat and build muscle as quickly as possible. He calls it, you know, how he hacked the male body. And I don't think he's quite figured out the female body. I'm actually working with him on his next book on the female body, because I think he missed a few important things in 4-Hour Body. But one of the pieces that he introduces is this idea of using Zeo. And when I first read about it, I thought, I'm not wearing a headband at night. I'm not going to do that. But I can tell you, I really want as much deep restorative sleep at night as possible. And if I don't measure it, if I don't use something like the Zeo, which costs something like $99 on Amazon, then I am not going to, if I'm not measuring it, I'm not going to change it. So I'm a big fan of measuring. Can you tell I was an engineer in college? Okay, so Zeo, cortisol manager, a few other tips. One other way to manage your cortisol, if you're someone who has high cortisol, we'll talk more about low cortisol a little later on in the course, but if you're someone who has high cortisol, you've got the muffin top, you've got anxiety, you feel tired but wired, maybe your sleep is disturbed. Another way to lower cortisol, one of my favorites, is with orgasm. So we know that orgasm gets you flooded with oxytocin within a minute, and that has a couple of effects. Number one, it lowers your cortisol if it's too high. It also does a very important thing that has been seen on MRI. So let me mention that. So women and men are very different when it comes to orgasm. This is a lot of the work of Nicole Dadone, and one of the reasons why I really admire her work, including her new book, Slow Sex. So we know that with men, when they have an orgasm, they have a particular set of physiology that comes into play. What's different with women is that we have these vigilant centers of vigilance in our brain, that are basically on all the time. We have these vigilance centers that are on all the time. And it is only with orgasm that these vigilance centers, which are just lit up on an MRI, a magnetic resonance image of your brain, these vigilance centers go dark when you have an orgasm. So this is really fascinating to me, and actually, I can actually feel this in my body. So orgasm is a really powerful way to change your cortisol, lower your cortisol if it's too high. It also raises your estradiol level if it's low. So if you're someone who's in menopause, we've got a lot of lovely women who are in menopause who are on Mission Ignition with us today and for the next 30 days. And if you are not on any estrogen, or even if you are, this is one of the ways that you can raise your estradiol level. And one of the things I talked to Nicole about in the webinar that she got for free as a bonus for signing up for Mission Ignition is that she has a woman who practices her particular form of orgasmic meditation, or OM. You got to download for how to OM. So she has a woman in her practice who is in menopause, and she had a regular OM practice. She would do orgasmic meditation 3 times a week very regularly, and she fell off. You know, like most of us, we're human. Sometimes we fall off with these practices that we do. When she fell off, she actually started to have symptoms of low estrogen. She developed hot flashes and night sweats and brain fog, and her memory started to get impaired, and she didn't sleep as well. She fell off the wagon for several months, and when she came back to her OM practice, she got all of those symptoms relieved. So this is one of the ways that you can balance your hormones without resorting to taking prescriptions that may have more significant risk associated with them, right? I mean, we'll talk more about this, but we know that even with bioidentical hormones, there's a small risk of stroke and heart disease and maybe a slight increased risk of breast cancer. It seems to be lower with bioidenticals versus synthetic hormones, but all of these risks exist, including blood clots. There's a threefold increased risk of blood clots, a little bit less if you use transdermal estrogen. So isn't this beautiful that there's a practice for women that actually raises estradiol level, and that's orgasm. So it doesn't have to be orgasmic meditation if that feels like not your thing. I have a lot of other practices that you can use that lower cortisol. You could start with soft belly, for instance, or yin yoga, or one of the fountaining or chakra exercises that I'm going to be giving you later on in the week. The other part that I want to highlight with orgasm and oxytocin is that it makes your thyroid more efficient. It helps you make more T3, which is the active form of thyroid hormone. So for those of you who have any issues with your thyroid, or maybe you have thyroid symptoms, you can take my thyroid questionnaire that's on my website at sarahgottfriedmd.com. And I would really love it if you had a sense of where you are with your thyroid function. What is your TSH, thyroid stimulating hormone? What is your free T3? And if you want extra credit, I would love to know both your free T3 and also your reverse T3, because reverse T3 blocks thyroid receptors. We're going to spend all of week 3 talking about metabolism, weight, and thyroid, so you'll be hearing more about it there. But you may want to ask your doctor for a test if you haven't had that done in the last 6 months, or you can also order it for a home test at canaryclub.org. I have no affiliation with Canary Club. It's just one of the ways that many of my patients are able to do self-testing if their doctor doesn't want to order some of the tests that they are interested in. Okay, so I want to shift now to a couple things about food, some of the foods that seem to really impact cortisol and sex drive, and I'm just going to give you a few highlights here. We're going to actually have an entire session with Alexandra Jameson, who is famous for this, and we're going to be doing a session with her. I believe it's November 21st at 11:30 a.m. Pacific. Yay. And so we're going to be talking in a lot more detail, but I just wanted to highlight a couple of things that you might be doing that could be impacting your sex drive and your vitality. So I already mentioned in the jump start the issue of alcohol, how that causes estrogen dominance, and also caffeine, how that blocks serotonin receptors. And I wanted to mention a couple of other things. One is artificial sweeteners. So I have a woman in my family who shall remain nameless. I love her to pieces, but she has a bit of a Diet Pepsi habit. And if you are someone who happens to like artificial sweeteners, I just want you to keep this in mind. Artificial sweeteners, aspartame in particular, depletes you of serotonin. So I would really love it over the next 30 days if you could get out of the habit of using artificial sweeteners. The only sweetener that I'm a fan of is stevia. And the beautiful thing with stevia, I will always try to give you a substitute when I tell you to cut something out. And the substitute that I like with stevia is some of the flavored stevia drops that are out there. So I have a bunch that I've tried from Whole Foods, and then I've also ordered some on Amazon, and I can give you some of my favorite flavors if you want to know about that. Just ask me in the forum. So there's a lot of flavored drops out there that are much better than what stevia tasted like, with kind of that bitter aftertaste when it first came out. The other thing that I like is xylitol. So if you're feeling like you need a sweetener, I would go with either xylitol or stevia. Xylitol is a derivative of stevia. Stevia is a plant. It's totally natural. And those are the only artificial sweeteners that I recommend. But I want you to stay away from aspartame. Try to do that for the next 30 days if it's part of your life right now. The same applies to sugar. So I am a fan of getting really clear about your relationship to sugar. I find that one of the most common symptoms of adrenal burnout or adrenal dysregulation, it goes by a lot of different names. So for people who have really high cortisol or low cortisol, they tend to crave sugar. And if this is true for you, we want to address it. We want to get really honest about what's behind, what's the root cause of your relationship to sugar. So talk about it in the forum if this is something that's true for you. And then the third part that we talked about in the jumpstart is water, the importance of water, and not letting your body get dehydrated. You don't want to be drinking water at the time of your meal. That's actually not a good idea. You want to be drinking water in between meals. And one of the most important parts here when it comes to the timing of your meals is that you have between 4 and 6 hours in between your meals. You don't want to be someone who is nibbling all day long. And I'm not even a big believer in snacks. If you have to have a snack, you really should look at your cortisol levels and see why. Is it because you're becoming hypoglycemic in between your meals? If you are becoming hypoglycemic, get to the root cause. You'll have much more sustained improvements if you get to the root cause, such as a high cortisol level, rather than just treating the symptom by eating a handful of nuts when you are feeling hypoglycemic. So you should be eating every 4 to 6 hours. For people who are eating every 2 to 3 hours, it tends to drive up your glucose and drive up your insulin and drive up your leptin level. I'll talk more about this as we move on. I saw from many of your Mission Ignition questionnaires that many of you struggle with a few extra pounds, maybe 5 pounds, 10 pounds or so. And often I find that this is related for women 35 plus to leptin levels. Leptin is one of the newer hormones. It's a cousin to insulin. It was only discovered in 1994. But if you're someone who eats frequently, that tends to drive up your insulin and your leptin, and that basically leads to fat storage rather than fat burning. So let me know if you want to know more about that in the forum. So we are getting close to the end of our session. I'm going to recap some of the things that we've talked about today. Before I do that, I just want to kind of hit some of the highlights of some of the factors that affect your adrenal function so that we really cast a wide net as we get started here with Mission Ignition. So let me just recap some of the factors that affect your adrenal glands and your production of cortisol, DHEA, testosterone, pregnenolone, those hormones that I mentioned. It also affects certain neurotransmitters. So we're going to be talking more about the interdependence between your hormones and your neurotransmitters. Things like, we know that estradiol raises your serotonin level. And if your estrogen level is really low, which I find especially in women who are thin, skinny minis, if your estrogen level is low, it's often the case that your serotonin is low. If you have been driving your adrenals hard for a long time, that also tends to deplete your serotonin. So here's a kind of a broad list. I'm going to take a sip of tea here. Here's a broad list of some of the factors affecting the adrenals. So number one, financial pressures, right? This is the time for it with our current economic crisis. Psychological stress, lack of relaxation. We talked about this, and I'm a case in point with my shortened telomeres. I can't believe I got a 29%. I've never gotten a 29% in my life. I got to get on this. Next one, negative attitudes and beliefs. So we talked about the 4 G's at the beginning. That's part of your jump start. You can undo negative attitudes and beliefs. Many of us have this tendency. We have a mental tendency to attach to negative attitudes and beliefs, and it takes mind retraining. It takes mental retraining to get out of that bad habit. Our brains are just sort of programmed to go to this negative place, and that can affect your adrenal glands. Maybe it's related to your employment. Maybe it's related to a boss that you don't love or doing work that doesn't feel completely authentic. I mentioned that coffee is one of the worst culprits, and you will almost never hear a doctor telling you not to drink coffee because 80 to 90% of mainstream physicians in the U.S. are addicted to coffee. Caffeine also has this effect, and we can talk about ways to get some of the benefits of things like green tea, the antioxidants, without subjecting your adrenals to the caffeine. Fear is another important one. We're going to be talking about fear quite a bit next week with Ellen Heed. Her last name is H-E-E-D. If you want to read about her, her website is ellenheed.com. And she'll talk about some of the muscles in the body and where you store fear. This is particularly interesting to me. So as a yoga teacher, there's one muscle in my back, on my right side. I used to think it was my SI joint, but it's actually my QL, my quadratus laborum. And that's a muscle where people tend to store fear. So that's where I know when I get really tight there, I know that I've got some fear response coming up. Lack of good food. We talked about some of the culprits today, artificial sweeteners and dehydration, things like that. Marital stress is another common one. I talk a lot about some of the stress I had early on in my marriage and how that impacted both sex drive and vitality. Prescriptions and also non-prescription drugs can affect your adrenal glands. Exercise, and this works both ways, both a lack of exercise and maybe excessive exercise. So I've had this period of time in my life where I was constantly calculating calories and then exercising excessively as a way to kind of maintain my weight. And if that's something that's true for you, I want to hear about it. We want to talk that through. Sugar and white flour products also can accelerate the aging process by affecting your cortisol level. Lack of sleep tends to raise cortisol level, and I'm going to talk about some of the breast cancer data and how this is related to cortisol if you want to hear about that. I know we've got one woman who's a breast cancer survivor, and if you want to know more, be sure to ask me on our live Q&A or in the forum. Smoking can do this too. Overexertion of any type. Maybe it's overwork. Maybe it's over-volunteering. Maybe it's traveling excessively. Allergies, emotional stress, infection, toxins. I talk quite a bit about bisphenol A and how that blocks thyroid receptors. Many of the toxins, the endocrine disruptors, can actually affect your adrenal function too. Repeated stresses, maybe something that you don't feel like you have any control over. And one other thing I want to mention, I have so many things I want to mention. One other thing I want to mention, and I can talk more about this over the next 30 days, I want to mention a paradigm that I find really interesting. And this is a paradigm called the 10 ways. I don't know if any of you have heard of this before, but it's a way of sort of assessing where you are in your life. And I think it's a beautiful thing to think about when you're somewhere midway. So I would define that as anywhere between 30 and 60. That's kind of the middle age, right? 10 ways. This is a paradigm developed by a brilliant man that I admire named James Flaherty, Flaherty. And he talks about kind of these 10 different stages of development. The first stage is where you're really in your immediate concerns. The second stage is balance. The third stage is what he calls conversations. And the fourth stage is power. Now, I'm just going to mention the first four of these 10 ways. And what he does when he teaches coaches, he leads a coaching program here in California. What he does when he teaches coaches is he has the coach assess whether their coachee is entering each stage, traversing the stage, or exiting the stage to the next one. And what we know is that 85% of the U.S. is in one of those first two stages, immediate concerns or balance. 85% of the U.S. is there. And as I set this intention at the beginning of having you really assess your fuel tank, I also want to end with this idea of the 10 ways. And where are you? Are you in a place of immediate concerns, what I would call survival? Many women who are 35 to 45 are in this place of survival. And it's okay to be there. It's just a good idea to know where you are and where are you heading. So immediate concerns, balance, I'll talk more about these when we get together next. Conversations, number four is power. Okay, so let me recap for you. And we will finish up. We went through a lot of content today, and if you're feeling overwhelmed, I want to say that's completely normal. That's okay. That's what change feels like. I want you to start with the one thing that lands for you and post it in the forum. So a reminder on our forum, it's totally private. It's by invitation only, and that forum is missionignition.ing.com. I feel like I can't even say it right. missionignition.ning. N Nancy, I N Nancy G, missionignition.ing.com. So post your gem there. I want you to start with the jump start, especially if you're feeling overwhelmed. Pick one thing on the jump start and write about your progress with it in the forum. Just pick one thing from this week's jump start and see how it goes. We talked about several meditations for you to try. I want all of you to work on a morning or evening ritual that is the you time. It's your you time over the next 30 days, your sadhana, as we say in Sanskrit, your method for lighting your fire. One of my yoga teachers, Shiva Ray, calls it the sacred art of fire tending. And I want you to attune to what is going to help you with tending your fire for the next 30 days. I'm going to give you a lot of tools for both assessing that and addressing it. We talked a little bit about the hypothalamic pituitary axis. This is the control system that governs Charlie's Angels. It governs your adrenal glands that we talked about today, your ovaries, which we're talking about more next week, and your thyroid. I'm going to address that a little bit more on Friday before we start off with our questions. We also talked about orgasm and cortisol. I offered a couple of solutions that I recommend, including cortisol manager and orgasmic meditation. So we're reaching the end of our session today. I want you to keep coming back to your five-step jump start for the week to manage your cortisol level. Think about measuring your cortisol level and possibly your telomeres. You can do that at spectracell.com.